I knew the little bastard didn't know how to load a 32. Who arranged for him to enter the prison and why? I did. God damn it, you helped arrange for a handsome kid like that to spend time in a maximum security federal prison? Have you no idea what could have happened, what probably did happen to him? Nothing happened to him. How the hell do you know? Jack is an expert in a very esoteric form of the martial arts. Big deal. Some of those guys, besides, Crystal said, he plays the guitar nicely. So, goddamned what? Fletch also wanted to shout at Crystal, I'm hungry. He didn't dare. Lots of people helped in the arrangements, Fletch. Like who? Jack Saunders. Saunders, he's retired. He's still meddlesome. The Attorney General of the United States. I've made a lot of friends since you last knew me. Friends? Jack is, and always has been, determined to follow in your footsteps. I tried to get into prison once, do a story. No one would let me. This is a special case. There's a real need for what he is doing. Like what? Jack went to Boston University's School of Journalism. He spent a lot of time with Jack Saunders and his wife. Jack, that is, Jack Fletcher Fayoni. So his name is backwards. Jack wanted to do his master's thesis on the tribe. Secret organization though it is, he had come across it in the universities, in the streets. In fact, they tried to recruit him. Your dear old editor, Jack Saunders, suggested he treat it as a story, do it right as something that could be published, something useful. Son of a bitch. We discussed it. You and Jack Saunders? Jack Saunders and I. You didn't discuss it with me. For whom is he supposedly doing this story? Maybe Fletch could find a steak somewhere on the way back to the airport, a rare steak. Do you think it is anything that might interest Global Cable News? I see. I was conned. Oh, I think anyone would be happy to have this story. Looks like you'll have to negotiate for it. Crystal laughed. Then I happened to be having a conversation with the Attorney General. Of the United States. He got back to me and asked to see Jack. The idea of using Jack appealed to him. There had been a plan to send a young FBI agent into the prison. Inmates in a maximum security prison would spot a trained agent in a blink of an eye. After meeting with Jack, the AG was certain Jack could carry this off. Jack gets the story rights. Uh-huh. There is this man, Chris Kriegel. We've met. He's very intelligent, apparently. He's a jerk. Fletch looked around the room. There wasn't even water to drink to fill up his stomach. In jail for murder. Yes, was. Using his civil rights as a federal prisoner, he organized and took control of the white supremacist movement, established what is called the tribe in every federal and state prison in this country. Race riots were happening in the prisons with increasing frequency. They were becoming more vicious. Kriegel had contacts, more than that, position and authority, not only in the supremacist movement outside the prisons, in this large country, but also in similar movements in Europe, Africa, and around the world. He was organizing a worldwide movement from his jail cell. They couldn't take his civil rights away from him without giving him publicity. They moved him from prison to prison, but that only made things worse, increased his contacts with the prison population, made him more powerful. They knew if they put him in solitary under some pretext, the whole prison system would explode. He's become impossibly dangerous. Jack was really onto something. So it was arranged for Jack to go to prison to win Kriegel's confidence, arrange his escape, and to stay with him, and to find out everything he could about his contacts, the organization, the tribe, his plans. Fletch shook his head. It's truth. It's a hell of a story, if I do say so myself. Hell of a master's thesis. But couldn't the kid just have written about the First Amendment like everybody else? Jack's not like everybody else. He's like you. I didn't have a mother as willing and weird as you are. You arranged for the kid to go to prison. We all did. It was what Jack wanted. He had an ulterior motive of his own, you see. Stop clucking. I'm not clucking. It was getting dark outside, and Fletch's mind was settling on pizza. I'm expostulating. Listen to me. It was arranged that if he did not succeed immediately in attracting Kriegel, Jack would be out of there in 6 hours. Out of prison? You're forgetting something. In prison, once he had Kriegel's attention and support, no one would dare touch him. Not in any way. Jack was as safe as if he were at home in bed. Horseshit. Nothing happened to him. You know that? I do. So what was his ulterior motive? You can't figure that out? Maybe. Tell me. To meet you on your own turf, to do as you used to do. Still do, I guess, if I view my GCN correctly. And to do it to you. Do it to me. He didn't want to approach you as a slavering kid. He didn't want to meet you as a pedestrian while you were on horseback. He wanted to meet you while he was working on his own big story. See if he could suck you into it. See if he could make you go along with him. If he could interest you in what he was doing, in him. Apparently he did, at least to some extent. He wants your respect, too. Surely you can see that. You're a weird mother. I have one other suspicion regarding his motivations.
What?
I think he was scared shitless by what he was doing. I think he wanted you with him. Fletch remembered Jack standing by the car last night. He had something to say. He didn't say it. Did Jack know the truth between father and son could only be bridged by the mother? What Jack did say was, "Trust me." And Fletch had answered something like he would store the request. Now Fletch knew who Jack was, and he knew something, specifically and generally, about what Jack wanted from him. Fletch exhaled two lungfuls of breath.
"I haven't..." Fletch cleared his throat. "I haven't much experience at responding to situations like this."
Crystal asked, "You want to know what Jack thinks of you now, Fletch?"
"No."
"He thinks you're senile," Crystal laughed. "He says you forget all the stories I tell about you." Fletch looked sharply at the curtain.
"You couldn't know that, Crystal, unless he's talked to you recently. He called this morning from Camp Orania."
"He took a chance telephoning from there, didn't he? And how come he can get through on the phone to you and we couldn't?"
"He's my son. He knows the appropriate password, and you don't."
"You could have saved a hell of a lot of bother."
"I'm hungry."
"Jack says he's doing very well. He's videotaped the camp and everyone in it. He spent the night copying all of the files out of the tribe's computer system, files from around the country and around the world. This afternoon, he was to attend some kind of a planning meeting. That must have been interesting."
"He told you about making everybody puke while Kriegel was speaking?"
"Oh, yes," Crystal laughed. "Shades of his father." Fletch did not ask if Jack had told his mother that the night before he had killed a man to save the lives of Carrie and Fletch.
"Stop selling him to me," Fletch said. "I've got the point."
"Last night he even discovered a list of people targeted for assassination by the tribe. Guess what?"
"What?"
"Your name's on it."
Fletch thought. "I suppose it would be."
"Erwin Maurice Fletcher."
Fletch sat forward in the oversized chair. "Those sons of bitches know Jack's my kid."
"Do they?"
"He's in danger."
Fletch jumped up. "I put him in danger. Shit, end of story. To hell with Blythe's spirit. Goodbye."
Fletch left Crystal's room.
In a moment, he returned. He leaned against the door jamb.
"Crystal, what are you doing here?"
"Slimming," she said.
"Jack tells me you've been coming here twice a year for years, and you're still slimming?"
"This time they're recommending I stay here, maybe for good."
"Are you serious?"
"I'm sick, Fletch. I've got a problem."
"You realize you referred to your being incommunicado here at Bly's Spirit as your ultimate line of defense?"
"Okay, I did. So what?"
"Ultimate line of defense against what? Me? Jack? Living?
Why do you need it?"
"You know all about addictions now? You got a better idea?"
"Always."
"Tell me."
"First, trust us."
"Whatever that means."
"Second, lower the food thermostat in your head."
"Oh, Fletch, what do you know?"
"I know I'll be back."
Chapter 23. "Time to go," Fletch said quietly. "Time to get you out of here."
"Huh?"
Jack's head raised from the pillow. He looked at Fletch in the door. He sat up on the cot and swung his feet onto the floor.
"I'm ready to go."
For a long moment, Fletch had stood in the door of the little office in the log cabin headquarters at Camp Orania looking at his son. Jack was asleep on the cot against the wall. The room was lit only by the desk light. Dressed in shorts, t-shirts, socks, and sneakers, Jack was sprawled on the cot, his face squished on the pillow. He slept soundly. His hair was tousled. To Fletch, he looked so young. Fletch wondered how his son had looked when even younger, as a boy, a child, a baby, asleep, awaking, awake, playing, listening, laughing, crying, happy, angry, bored. Standing in the door, just watching his son sleep, Fletch realized something of how much he had missed. It was dawn, Monday.
Sitting on the edge of the cot, Jack shook his head. I was wondering how I was going to get out of here. Fletch said, There is a thick fog. Fletch had had to fly from Chicago back to Nashville through Atlanta at that hour of the night. He had left his car at the Nashville airport. He had eaten 3 sandwich suppers since leaving Blythe Spirit. In the fog, the drive from Nashville to Tolliver, Alabama, had been slow. Even though Route I-65 was a good, clear highway, he had not dared drive faster than the speed which would allow him to stop safely within half the distance of his visibility. Finding the entrance to the timber road into Camp Orania proved a challenge. In the fog, he went by it 3 times before finally spotting the sentry box a few meters down the road. He stopped at the sentry box, prepared to say, Codename Siegfried. No one came out of the box to challenge him. Once in the main area of the encampment, he parked the station wagon in the woods, facing outward toward the main road. The only light was in the front right room of the headquarters log cabin. He crept onto the porch, threw the screened door quietly, and pushed open the door to the office. Fletch asked, Were you waiting for me? Jack said, I don't know. Let's get out of here. Dawn light was penetrating the fog. From somewhere in the camp, there was the sound of one man alone roaring with what might have been laughter. It was a high sound, sporadic. It sounded nervous, uncertain, crazed. Fletch said, I guess Leary is up. Yeah, Jack said, he's been mixing coke and booze and God knows what else. Not what he needs. Not what anybody needs. Jack took a plastic shopping bag from the knee hole of the desk. In it were computer disks, audio, and videotapes. From outside, closer, Leary roared with insane laughter. It was the same laughter he had uttered just before he had smashed his forehead against another man's. Then there came the rapid fire of not one, but 2 semi-automatic weapons. Fletch glanced through the window. Leary was standing near the flagpole. He had a semi-automatic weapon in each hand. He was firing both weapons in a full circle around the camp. He was yelling, Get 'em! Get 'em, guys! They're everywhere! Get 'em now! As Fletch saw Leary pivoting to face the cabin, he ducked. Down, Jack, get down. What's happening? Leary's shooting up the camp. Has he gone crazy? Shells came through the window glass. The desk lamp shattered. Fletch sprawled on the floor. There was the sound of other firing, a lot of it. Men were yelling on all sides of the camp. Jack reached up to the desk and grabbed the camcorder. Paranoids are their own worst enemies, he quoted. He crawled through the door of the office to the cabin's front screen door. Wait a minute, Fletch said. No, no, Jack! Jack pushed open the base of the screen door. He continued crawling on his stomach out onto the porch. Jack, no! Fletch crawled after him. He grabbed Jack's leg. Jack pulled his leg free of Fletch's grip. Fletch saw that on the muscle at the top of the calf of Jack's left leg was a tattoo of a small, wide-opened blue eye. It was complete with lashes. It stared behind Jack. Fletch had not noticed the blue eye tattoo on his son's leg before. He laughed. The screen door closed behind Jack. Fletch remained on the floor inside the screen door. He was not much safer than Jack was. Through the door, Fletch could see the figures with their weapons standing on all sides of the camp in the fog. They could have been anybody, friends to each other or foes. They came out from cover while still pulling on their pants, stamping their feet into boots. They were shooting around the hills above them. They were shooting around the camp. They were shooting each other. At the base of the flagpole, Leary was dead meat. In the fog, the figures with their spewing weapons took on the postures, the poses of comic book characters, cartoons. They stood bravely, stupidly in the open, feet separated, knees a little bent, shoulders low. They fired their weapons from their waists. They sprayed bullets every which way. They shot at every noise they heard, at every figure they saw, at anything that moved. Hit by fire, they even fell like comic book characters, some rising up and sitting down hard, then rolling on the ground to accept death. Some flung their arms up dramatically, then dropped their weapons before falling themselves. To Fletch, these men seemed to rush to their deaths, savor it. They did little or nothing to protect themselves. On his belly on the porch, Jack was taping it all. In the increasing light, few now were firing toward the cabin headquarters. God, the stupid bastards! Wolf was on the floor beside Fletch, looking through the bottom of the screen. Jesus, these goddamned fools, I hate them. Look at what they're doing to each other. How many are dead so far? Fletch said, about 20. Kriegel, his girth dressed only in a towel, stepped between Fletch and Wolf. He pushed open the screen door. On the porch, Kriegel raised his arms. He yelled, Stop firing!
Were we attacked?
Wolf asked Fletch.
Yeah, by Leary.
Leary? Why?
Guess he got a snootful.
Tracy was on the floor beside Commandant Wolf. Blood had drained from the boy's face.
Stop shooting! Kriegel shouted. Stop! Stop!
Arms still raised, Kriegel stepped off the porch. Yelling as loud as he could in all directions, he began to cross the encampment toward the flagpole.
Stop! Stop! Listen to me! Stop shooting, you damned swine!
5 meters from the cabin, Kriegel was shot in his right leg. He spun around with the shot. Holding his bleeding leg in his hand, he continued across the encampment. Within another couple of meters, he was hit in the chest and face. That time, when he spun, he fell to the ground and stayed there.
Jesus, Wolf said. These guys, these stupid damned...
The firing continued for some minutes. The encampment was littered with bodies. A few still writhed. Except for the pain and the crying, these few were as good as dead. Then there was a long moment of silence. On the porch, Jack was checking his camcorder. Wolf stood up and went through the screen door. Tracy followed Fletch onto the porch. Hands in the back pockets of his uniform pants, Wolf stood at the top of the steps and surveyed the carnage. Fletch asked Jack, "Did you get it all?"
"Yeah."
"Even through the fog?"
"Oh, yeah, this has an 8-to-1 focus.
You could see them better than they could see each other." Jack left the porch. He moved around the camp, videotaping every corpse. Fletch asked Wolf, "Do you suppose there are any we can try to save?"
Wolf said, "Who gives a shit?"
From the direction of the trailers where the women and girl children lived, they came and stood together in a wide-eyed, unmoving, silent group. They came so far and no farther. Jack came back toward the porch. "How many dead?" Fletch asked him.
36, two still suffering. Those two are beyond help."
"How many were in the camp?" Fletch asked Wolf.
41.
"I guess a few slept late,"
Wolf said.
"They're under their beds. Bastards, all of them. There was nothing I could do with them. Such fools, useless, dumb fools."
Fletch held Jack's shopping bag of discs and tapes. "Let's go," he said to his son. Jack dashed into the log cabin. He came out carrying the guitar by its neck.
Wolf asked, "Where? Where are you going?"
Fletch shrugged. "Out into that big, scary world out there, I guess." At the sound of the whimpering, Fletch turned back to survey the encampment. Like a sniffing puppy, Tracy, in his uniform, was darting from one dead body to another, looking at each for a moment, wringing his hands, making this most pitiful noise of distress, fright, shock. On the porch, Wolf drew his pistol from his holster. He waved it vaguely in the air. For a moment, Fletch was unsure whether it was Wolf's idea to shoot at Jack and Fletch or to shoot himself. While Fletch watched, Wolf slumped down onto a camp chair. He lowered his head. He held his pistols between his knees. Yellow sunlight was breaking through the fog. Wolf's hair turned brassy in that sunlight. The dead bodies strewn on the ground began to cast shadows. Chapter 24, the last chapter. There were still patches of fog in the low places, but for the most part, Fletch drove Jack through a dazzling sunny morning toward Huntsville Airport. It was hard for each of them to assimilate what he had heard, seen, experienced, felt in a foggy encampment surrounded by woods just minutes before. As Fletch turned onto the road away from the encampment, Jack had asked, "We're not reporting this?"
"That's the point, isn't it, to report it?"
"I mean now."
Jack glanced at the cellular phone on the car seat next to Fletch.
"To the cops or something.
You said there was no need for medical attention, right?"
"Yeah," Jack said. "Those who are dying are dead. Those weapons don't leave many survivors."
"You'll need time to do the story. Wolf can report the mess, if he will. Let's not blow the story."
"I've heard that about you. You once reported a murder to your editor and asked him to tell the photographers to give the widow time to get home to report the murder."
"Did I?"
"You just said I've got a story here."
Jack patted the plastic shopping bag on his lap.
"Oh, sure. And you think it's a little hotter, more immediate than a master's thesis?"
"Well, don't you?"
"I don't know. I've never read a master's thesis, let alone written one."
"For whom am I doing this story?"
"You mean for which news organization?"
"Yeah."
"Your choice. It's your story."
"Don't you have some sort of influence at Global Cable News?"
"Me? Not much."
You're consulting-slash-contributing editor for GCN.
Well, yeah, they pick up the phone to me.
Jack looked out his window. I guess I could call Jack Saunders. He must know somebody who would be interested in this story.
Yeah, Fletch said, you might do that.
But I've got all this videotape, Jack said. What would the print press do with it?
Good point. Well, we might give GCN a try, if that's what you want to do.
As he drove, Fletch pressed Andy Sist's home number into a cellular phone panel.
Andy, sorry to wake you up.
Yes, Mr. Fletcher, Andy slurred into the phone. It's all right, Mr. Fletcher, really.
Come on now, Andy, I haven't bothered you since yesterday.
Yesterday, Sunday, the day before, Saturday.
Do you think you guys will be able to make anything much out of that Blythe spirit story? In the car, Jack's eyes cut to Fletch. Andy's voice became more awake.
Actually, Mr. Fletcher, it may turn into a good story. We're surrounding it with talking heads, other experts, to give their opinions on the therapy Blythe Spirit is offering. And at what prices? Looks like it might turn into a story of genuine medical fraud.
Attaboy, Andy. I thought we might end up about there.
And, Mr. Fletcher, until 2 this morning, I was looking into something called The Tribe. You remember you asked about something called The Tribe? Well, it looks like a hell of a story.
That's what I'm calling about, Andy.
What?
The Tribe. Expect a news break on The Tribe any minute now. What you get at first won't be the real story. Not even close. Probably won't even mention The Tribe by name.
What's the break?
At a supposedly secret camp in the woods in Alabama, 38 members of The Tribe just shot each other.
Did you say shot each other?
It was foggy. One nut started shooting and they all started shooting. 38 dead. Among the dead is a man who called himself the Reverend Dr. Commandant Chris Kriegel.
The escapee from the federal pen in Thomaston, Kentucky.
The same.
He's dead?
No deader than he should be.
Which is pretty dead.
Very dead.
I was researching him last night. I mean, this morning. That was the clue I took from you, Chris Kriegel.
Now Andy's voice was excited. Also, escapee John Leary has finished shaking the earth.
By the way, they recovered Juan Moreno's body yesterday in some farmer's gully in Tennessee.
That's nice.
Mr. Fletcher, have you got this story? I mean, of the shooting?
Who, me?
No, you haven't?
Andy, at 10:30 your time, do you think you could meet someone at National Airport?
Sure, who?
A young reporter named Jack Faoni.
Why does that name sound familiar to me?
He has everything. Complete computer files on the tribe from around the country, around the world, membership lists, lists of those targeted for assassination. Jack grinned broadly across the car seat at Fletch. Bank accounts, their plans, personal knowledge of Chris Kriegel. He's even got videotape of the shooting this morning.
Wow!
All in one little plastic shopping bag.
How? Who is this Faoni?
Just a kid I've been working with the last few days.
The woman you went to see at Blythe Spirit yesterday is named Faoni.
Yeah, I had to establish this kid's credibility. He appeared out of nowhere, you see, a complete unknown to me.
And he's good stuff?
Oh, yeah, Fletch said. I think there's good stuff in him. He'll need your help, though. Is Sally free? This tape he took in the fog will need the best editing. Obviously, it should be the lead and on the air as soon as you can manage it. Unless California falls into the sea or something else of greater interest to more people happens.
Yes, sir.
I would think you'd all want to work on a longer documentary format for later, but not much later.
Yes, sir, Mr. Fletcher.
Faoni will have to hold some of the stuff back. That's got to be understood from the beginning. The Attorney General of the United States has had much personal input into this story.
I understand.
Book rights and film rights to Faoni if he wants them. He'll be on the Air T flight from Huntsville, arriving at Washington's National Airport at 10:36 EDT.
I'll be there.
Andy?
Yes, Mr. Fletcher?
Please don't call me later, okay? I need to get some sleep.
Gee, Mr. Fletcher, I'd never think of disturbing your sleep. Never. Not ever.
After clicking off the phone connection, Fletch handed Jack his airplane ticket.
I got this for you at 2:00 this morning in Atlanta. You even have an assigned seat.
While Jack studied his ticket, Fletch said to Jack, a woman named Slavenka Draculic, a victim of the most recent Balkan ethnic cleansing wars, wrote in the New York Times Sunday magazine,
We are the war. I'm afraid there is no one else to blame. We all make it possible. We allow it to happen. There is no them and us. There are no numbers, masses, categories. There is only one of us, and yes, we are responsible for each other. Got a pen and piece of paper? Jack asked. In the glove compartment. Just thought that quote might add something to your story, if it fits in anywhere. How do you spell her name? By golly, the kid can even work pen and paper. Fletch stopped the station wagon outside Air T's departure gate at Huntsville Airport. I won't be going in with you if you don't mind. Home and bed for me. Thanks for the interesting weekend. Before getting out of the car, Jack said, "You went to Wisconsin yesterday to see my mother. She sent her best. How did she seem to you?" "She kept herself concealed behind a curtain, Jack. I couldn't really see her." "Oh, as astute as ever." Jack got out of the car. "Wait a minute," Fletch said. On the sidewalk, Fletch unbuttoned his shirt. "You've been wearing that shirt since Friday night. Mine isn't exactly fresh either, but at least for the most part, I've been in air conditioning since I put it on yesterday morning. I don't want you put off the plane because you stink even higher to heaven."
"Switch shirts?"
"Why not?"
"Here?"
"We have a choice. You don't have time to buy a new shirt."
"No, I don't."
On the sidewalk, Fletch and Jack switched shirts. Jack's shirt smelled really bad. It felt grimy. Jack asked, "How did you know I didn't shoot at that cop?"
"Because I didn't know how to load the gun you handed me?"
"More than that."
"What?"
"I doubt you'd attempt anything without accomplishing it. Even murder." Fletch was within 10 miles of the farm. As soon as he could after leaving Huntsville Airport, he had stopped at a truck stop for coffee. Before even ordering his coffee, he had bought a new shirt and thrown Jack's into a rubbish barrel. His new T-shirt had a logo on it which read, "Why hug the road when you've got me?" He had a choice of either that logo or a beer advertisement. Fletch felt strangely lonely. The sight of Jack heading into the airport terminal in Fletch's own shirt, carrying his plastic shopping bag full of a big story on discs and audio and videotapes, that silly small tattoo of a blue eye staring behind him from the top of the calf muscle of his left leg, almost winking as he walked, the way Jack turned before going through the circular door, grinned and waved at Fletch, knowing full well his father was watching him. He was missing the kid. Shoot, I didn't even know he existed before Friday. Fletch found the phone on the car seat beside him and pressed the number of the farm. Carrie answered. "Hello?
Hello?
Where are you?"
"I'll be home in a few minutes."
"That's good. Hey, Fletch, guess what?"
"What?"
"I made a firecracker cake."
Fletch said, "Oh, boy."
This concludes the reading of Son of Fletch by Gregory MacDonald. This book was read by Grover Gardner. Additional titles by Gregory MacDonald in the Books on Tape Library include Fletch 1 and Fletch 2. For additional information about them or for help with topics of related interest, please call our customer service department or check our catalog index to find review material.